The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's a good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. We will have Pedro Gomez zoom on in because tonight is game one of the World Series, Dodgers and Rays. We will have Michael Fabiano, all things fantasy football, and Tua is going to start in Miami. So Michael's going to join Sandy Charles on that. That will be later on in the show around 10:45-ish. We were up late last night putting together the TV show, which airs tonight on Fox Sports Arizona. Brad Sessmatt, Football AZ, presented by Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate their support. That will be tonight. The game last night, front and center. I'll get into that here momentarily. So we have that to kick around. Eric is on assignment. Eric has stumbled. I shouldn't say stumbled. Well, he's not here, so I'll just say he stumbled into a story. I can tell when Eric has something that he's really, really excited about. Those of you that watch the years, we're kind of yin and yang. But when Eric finds a story, he will start pinging me incessantly about the details of the story. He's found a story here in the state of Arizona on the high school end that once again will do really, really well. And once again, others will follow and do the story themselves after Eric's original airing of it goes. That's how it works in a lot of spaces. Eric finds it, others follow. That's why he is who he is. He's so good. And I don't give out praise very often, but he's just a rock star. He's been pinging me since he started this story at 4 a.m. this morning. He started pinging me around 6:30 with details. So what's going to have him zoom on in, but he just needs to go focus. So that's where we are. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. They take care of us here at Sports 360 AZ. We appreciate their partnership. We stop in at the Desert Financial Credit Unions and take care of our business. That's a Desert Financial Credit Union. Make sure you support all of our partners that are part of Sports360AZ.com. Cardinals. So let's start there. The game last night, I spent most of yesterday in between and out of the two football games that took place. The Chiefs-Bills was, you know, Buffalo's looked flat the last couple weeks. But as the afternoon progressed, I was really getting amped up to see the game. I don't know about you, but because the Cardinals just were not interesting from 2016 to 2019, there are games where I think the hype becomes too much. Last night, there was not enough hype around it. I was really geeked up because the angles were so pronounced and so cool to follow. So the game starts, and it's kind of a dud early, right? I mean, I'm not alone on that, I don't think. The first quarter, I don't know if Kyler was nervous. You know, when people say afterwards, well, what did you think? I'm really not going to get straightforward stuff. They want to get through that and get on the plane and go home. So I don't put much into that stuff. I know this, that as the game progressed, it was pretty evident, not just by the final score, that the Cowboys blow. It's pretty evident that Andy Dalton was not even in the same zip. He was not in the 214. He was not. He was not in the area code of Dallas. And a lot of that had to do with the Cardinal defense. I'm not going to sit here and say Andy Dalton was terrible because Andy Dalton was terrible, but Andy Dalton was terrible because the Cardinal defense got after him. Vance Joseph said, we're going to blitz, and we're going to blitz not just a few times. We're going to blitz all day long. And then Zeke Elliott fumbles the football twice. And if you're a Cowboy fan, I joked about it on Twitter this morning, but it's a fact. Cowboy fans are the biggest front runners that there are in professional sports outside of Dodger and Laker fans. It's just the way it is. When your team stinks, we don't hear from you. When your team is great, you want everybody to know how great you are, even though you haven't existed in a long time. So the bandwagon crashed on the Broadway curve. Fans jumped off. Ankles broke because their team blew last night. It's hard to believe that there's a team in the NFC East that should even be allowed into the playoffs. I mean, really. If you go top to bottom of that division right now, the four teams of the NFC West are far better. I had some Cowboy fans like, well, at least we're in the playoffs. We're in first place. Like, did you even see your team? You really want to go down that path? And so I look at all four teams in the NFC West, and they all have, look, every team's got a flaw or two. You just have to search really hard for it. And teams ebb and flow. We were sitting here before yesterday's game talking about if the Cardinals were to lose to Dallas last night, it would be devastating because the next stretch of games is going to be really hard, starting with Seattle this Sunday. Instead, we're sitting here today saying, okay, on a nationally televised platform, everybody saw, facts don't lie, Dallas stinks, the Cardinals are great. So the last 2 weeks, when I say great, Kyler Murray wasn't great last night, at least throwing the football, but just him in a jersey on the field is great. He is so much fun to watch. You want to keep him upright. He doesn't take straight on shots very often. He knows when to get down. I like how some people on social today were like, wow, he really slides well. You might want to go look at where he was drafted in the baseball draft. It was like last night, Brian Griese was trying really hard to keep the game interesting and entertaining. So I can't bang away on broadcasters, but I think you have to know that Buda Baker is the highest paid player in the game at his position. And Lewis Riddick had to point that out when Brian Griese was like, yeah, wow, Buda Baker is playing. He's playing pretty well. He's really been a great player tonight. And Lewis Riddick's like, well, yeah, he should be. He's the highest paid player in his position. Ta-da! Whew. Rough. So for them to get the victory over the Jets, who stink, and the Cowboys, who aren't good, and now they come back home, and they've been through this death stretch of on the road, on the road, on the road. And it may well come back to haunt them, the losses to Detroit and Carolina. But, you know, if you're able to split with Seattle, if you're able to beat Seattle on your home turf, Seattle is coming off a bye week. There's always something about how do teams perform off a bye. But this is a veteran team with a veteran quarterback. Nobody's played better than Russell Wilson at his position this season. Hasn't happened. So I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this show or the rest of this week talking about beating Dallas. The Cardinals should have beat Dallas. Dallas isn't good. Everything now is focused on Sunday with Seattle. Everything moving forward should be focused on Seattle. Like if I'm Buda Baker, and I'm the highest paid guy in the land, and I played my ass off last night against Dallas, and I've got Seattle coming to town. And I don't know, I went to UW, and I don't know, the Seahawks passed on me one pick before the Cardinals took me. And now I'm the highest paid guy in all the land. I might want to lay some lumber. Like the one thing about last night, and it's easy to say this when a team is winning and winning big, it's that the Cardinals had fun. Like if you think the bowling alley routine in the end zone was something that was unsportsmanlike, totally disagree. We need fun during a pandemic. I don't know. We can't sit here and have brain surgery all day long and break it. Let's break it down. You know, the backup right tackle played really well. No, there was a bowling alley incident in the end zone with the Cardinals with a football. They had fun, right? So it's a gritty group, and it's easy to have fun when you know the team you're playing is not good at all, and you're just drilling them into submission. Like Dallas has some fine individual players. I take CeeDee Lamb on my team, but the Cardinals did a good job against him. Ezekiel Elliott last night couldn't hang on to the football. That looked like a team that wasn't that disciplined. And to that end, the Cardinals did once again have penalties last night. They are the most penalized team in the NFL. So there are areas in which they have to get better. Most penalized teams in the NFL usually, typically, find their way into a game that they shouldn't lose. And if that happens in early January when it's playoff time or here in a pandemic, if we have some weeks wiped out, it may well be into February this year. So the fact that they won and did so convincingly, there were areas to improve. Kyler Murray's accuracy in throwing the football. Didn't look like he was on the same page with DeAndre Hopkins or Fitz last night. Why is that? I don't know. And I'm not going to take the, yeah, we have to go back and work on it. Let's just see on the field. On the field, put it out there. But I really like how they just took care of business last night. That game was over in the middle of the third quarter. It just, and it had a feeling of, as we got closer to halftime, it's, wow, Dallas is not going to be able to do anything. And I was like seeing Jerry Jones mad. I like it when I see a headline of Jerry Jones not happy at all. Tough, deal with it. You know, you're the Cowboys. You got it all figured out. You have your nice, big, shiny, big stadium. Great. And your team stinks. So now Seattle comes up next. All right, World Series. Dodgers and Rays. Pedro Gomez joins me on the other side. We'll get into that. While some college football. Plus, this is a huge week for us on a national stage here in Arizona. We have two teams on the high school platform that are playing on ESPN. I'll get into that later on in the show. Sandy Charles and Michael Fabiano, the Fantasy Football Focus. That's all straight ahead. World Series is tonight. We have Tampa Bay. We have the Dodgers. We have Pedro Gomez, most importantly, ESPN baseball analyst, insider, with us for a few minutes. Are you excited for this series as a fan? Let's just start with it. We're not supposed to be fans, but I think some of us have it inside of us where, wow, this is really cool, Dodgers, Rays, or it's like, eh.
I think it's absolutely cool because you've got all these Hollywood names on one side, Kershaw, Bellinger, Turner, Seager, Mueller, Betts. I mean, you've got, you know, a list. And then on the other side, you've got who? Who's that guy? Zunino. What? Kiermaier. Who? Lau. It's not even spelled low. It's spelled low. you know, you've got a bunch of players who I would say that casual to semi-decent baseball fans would have a difficult time pointing out who they are if you showed them a lineup. For that reason, I think it's kind of cool.
So how did they get here then? Because there are the casual fans that are going to drop in on this and say, the heck is Tampa Bay all about? How did they get here?
When did they get a team?
Right. They're not the Devil Rays. They're the Rays. I've been gone that long. What's going on?
Exactly. It's funny. Dusty Baker called them the Devil Rays the other day in a Zoom interview. you know how they got here? They got here through scouting, player development, research. They have a lot of people that other clubs didn't want. In games 2 and 3, of the 9 players starting in the field, only 2 were original draft picks. Mm. Everyone else came from some other organization via trade, not even just, you know, via trade strictly. And they have a good plan of maybe looking at another club and saying, they're not using this guy right. If they were to do X, Y, and Z, that guy could be a player. And it's hard to argue. Manuel Margot came from the Padres. Willie Adames, their shortstop, came from the Tigers. Kevin Kiermaier is an original draft pick. Randy Arozarena, who's the best player, maybe him and Seager are the best players this postseason, came from the Cardinals. Zunino, their catcher, came from the Mariners. They just do a very, very good job of scouting other organizations. And I'll say this, Brad. I remember talking to John Schuerholz, the legendary GM of the Braves,
right,
back in the day when the Braves were on that long run. And before that, he had been with the Royals. And he told me, Pedro, the most important thing that you have to do as an organization is scout yourself better than anyone else can. Mm-hmm. You have to recognize what you have more than an outside organization being able to see something that you don't. And if you think about it, all those years that he was the GM of the Braves, I can only think of 2 players that he traded away that maybe they would say, maybe we should have hung on to that guy. And that's Adam Wainwright and Jermaine Dye. And in the Adam Wainwright deal, they were getting Mark Teixeira for that playoff run right there. And sometimes you got to give to get for that short-term burst. So I think the Rays have done a very good job of scouting other organizations, probably better than those organizations have scouted themselves.
Pedro Gomez with us for a few minutes. It's well put. The pressure is all on the Dodgers, though, right?
No doubt.
Every last bit is
no doubt.
And every last bit's on Dave Roberts. Like, when they're down 3-1, I'm thinking, you know, they're going to go after him on this and say, the run is over. It's been nice. Thank you very much for playing. See you later. And I felt that, even though they've had great success, but they haven't won a title since 88. So the expectations are up here. The Lakers just won again. So LA is all about the Lakers. Now the Dodgers, the pressure's on them. But so the pressure on LA, just speak to that if you could.
I don't think it's anything less than what you just described. It's a mountain of pressure. I will say this, that Dave Roberts, if they had lost 4-1 to the Braves, I don't know that Dave Roberts would have been retained. And I don't know that that would have necessarily been the right thing, because, and the reason I say that is because they're an organization that has run so much from the top down. You know, the lineups are handed to Dave Roberts. The script in terms of when to pull the starting pitcher is hammered into him before the game. We cannot let this guy get to a third turn in the order. Absolutely not. No matter what's happening, you have to pull him. So his hands are tied to a large degree. But we know that that's the type of person that always takes the fall if things don't go right. It's not going to be Andrew Friedman, the GM, firing himself. But it has worked out. Look, they have an elite roster. They have elite all-star caliber players, among the top players in the game in some respects. And they should win. But we both know, I know in talking to Tony La Russa over the years, he said the most difficult thing to do is win when you're supposed to win. That is really, really hard to do, because if you do anything less, you're a complete failure. And that's where the Dodgers are at. They box themselves into that corner.
Well, they also have a guy named Kenley Jansen down in the bullpen. Yeah. As long as I see Kenley Jansen warming up, it's I'll just go back to – and Kenley Jansen's much better than this player I'm about to mention, but it's like when Greg Olson would come out of the Diamondbacks bullpen way back in the day. It's like nothing good is going to happen right about now, or it's going to be an adventure. And I loved Ole. But there's just certain guys, and it's 20 – that's a reference of 24, 23 years ago, whatever.
Yeah.
When I see Kenley Jansen, it's – even the other night, it's game 7, and they're not bringing Kenley Jansen in to close the door. So are you saying Andrew Friedman has got a text in to Dave Roberts? No, you're not bringing him in.
I don't know that it's at that level, but
– as I watch, you know.
I'm sure it's to the degree of, if you can avoid him – in a high leverage situation, let's try to avoid that. And that's where they're at with Kenley Jansen right now. They're trying to avoid the highest leverage of situations with him. Because, yeah, he was warming up, and here you had Urias throwing his third inning, and he got a 3-inning save.
Yeah. I mean, that tells you really where you're at with Jansen.
Yeah.
I want to talk about Cody Bellinger for a bit. So, when he was at Hamilton High School, and I reached out to Coach Woods this week just to do something kind of fun on, you know, Cody's deal, and he's been this terrific regular season player, and then the postseason comes, and he doesn't do much, and people are on his backside, and then he hits the home run the other night. Pedro, can you see where that would take a load off of someone like Cody Bellinger, just one swing, one at-bat in a high-pressure, high-leverage situation? And now the rest of the way, it's much easier. I don't know, easier is the wrong word.
Yeah, no, I see. I get what you're saying. I think that ever since he got benched in the 2018 World Series against the Red Sox, where he didn't get his first at-bat in two of the games until the eighth inning because he was on the bench, because the numbers weren't working for him. I remember talking to Andrew Friedman during that World Series saying, how can you have – the player with your highest upside sitting on the bench? And his response was, the numbers just aren't there right now for him. I didn't care. I thought Cody Bellinger should have been playing every inning of every game in that postseason, because he's capable of just coming out of it at any moment, and you don't know when.
Right.
But that's where analytics, you get an idea of what analytics means to the Dodgers. They did not believe that Cody Bellinger had a chance of succeeding in that World Series. And, you know, they lost that series in 5 games to the Red Sox. So I think that Bellinger, the MVP award last year, or was it last year or 2 years ago? God, the years.
Last year.
Yeah, right now with COVID, it could have been 8 years. It could have been 8 years ago for all I know.
I think it was.
But I think it's gotten to a point where Bellinger, I don't know that that one home run is all he needed. He's brimming with confidence. He thinks he's the best player on the planet. And I think that he's in a very good space.
He's not Mookie Betts though. So
wow.
I know. So what do you think the people in Boston are thinking right about now? I mean, the storyline of David Price just watching all of this
yeah.
is really interesting to me. But then here's
watching from Scottsdale, by the way.
Is that right? Is that where he is?
Yeah, he lives there. He lives here.
but then to see what Mookie Betts is putting on display, full display, and just showing that by far the best player on the field, in my opinion.
Oh, yes.
In this World Series.
Him or Randy or Rosarena with Tampa. That guy's hitting everything.
Yeah. So in Betts' case, what is it about him that has come to the Dodgers where there's not a mention of Corey Seager, like, promotionally? Everything is Betts, and that's just because Boston, big market, East Coast marketing, right? Or is it just
Betts? I think it's because Betts is one of the top, if not the top player in the game. He might be – I know this is going to sound sacrilegious to a lot of people or blasphemous, but he might be a better all-around player than Mike Trout right now.
Wow.
He is at the top of his game.
Look at you.
And, well, there's nothing he can't do.
Yeah.
There is nothing he can't do, and that includes succeeding in October. He's already got a World Series ring with Boston. He's looking for his second one now. I don't think it has anything to do with the fact that he was a Red Sox. I think it has to do with the talent level that we are seeing. And we're watching maybe a young Willie Mays type player. I'm not saying he's going to be Willie Mays, but he's got all the tools that Willie displayed at a similar age.
Okay, before I get you out of here, Pedro Gomez with us, two things. One, I have to go back on Dave Roberts, so because it escaped me. If they don't win this World Series, it'll be another year. 88, no. Has the message run thin? Andrew Friedman is not going to fire himself. Is the pressure on Dave Roberts to win this World Series, or it's time for a reset with a manager's chair in L.A.? Do you think it's come to that?
I think the fact that they've reached the World Series probably negates that decision, no matter what. I mean, now, look, if they get swept, then all bets are off. Who knows? If they get embarrassed in the World Series, then you could make an argument that, hey, we need to make a change. But I think reaching the World Series, the way they overcame the Braves, that probably, like I said, anything short of an embarrassment in the World Series has saved Dave Roberts for another year. But the fact that we're even having that conversation, because this has been a tremendous five-year run for Dave Roberts, tremendous. And the fact that we're even having this discussion lets you know how paper thin the level of strength of these jobs is. No matter what you do, it can be snapped away from you at any moment. Obviously, in a place like LA, where winning is the only thing, the pressure mounts.
Yeah. You know, I mean, a week ago, when they're down 3-1, it's okay, what's going to happen here? Well, one last thing. There may be nothing on this front. Anything with the Diamondbacks? Anything at all? I've not asked you about them in like 6 weeks because they've been so far off the radar. And here we are seeing a team within their division back in the World Series.
Yep.
Is there anything interesting at all going on with them? I know winter meetings are a month away, but sometimes.
Well, that's if they have winter meetings. Winter meetings, I've heard, are going to be virtual.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They're not going to. Yeah, exactly. I would say what you just mentioned, maybe without even realizing what you mentioned, anything interesting with the D-backs.
Yeah.
I don't know that there is anything interesting with the D-backs.
I got
That's a big part of the problem. They are very bland, and there's not a lot of talk of the D-backs in town.
Yep.
I don't think I'm alone. I mean, I was in San Diego for the last 3 weeks covering all the American League playoffs, plus the Padres Cardinals round. But I would say that there's a lot of apathy.
Yep.
And you and I have had this conversation before where there's nothing worse for a franchise than apathy. Because if people are throwing stones or barbs at you, at least they care.
Yeah.
But when there's no talk,
nothing.
That is worse because that means they don't care.
Yeah. No, I got you. I got you on that. I'll let you go. Good seeing you. I'm glad you're back home safe after having to rough it in the gas lamp for 3 weeks. See you later. Thanks.
All right, Brad.
There's Pedro Gomez with us, and we're back with more after this timeout. Fantasy football segment with Michael Fabiano on the other side. Sandy Charles takes over. That's here in a few minutes. a few other things in my mind on this Tuesday, and that is this is a big week in the Valley because obviously with Cardinals Seahawks, ASU closer to playing, a couple weeks away. I'm going to go to LA. I'll be at the game in an empty stadium just because I want to see what it's like against USC. That's in a few weeks. Wise guys in Vegas actually have the Trojans favored. And Friday night, okay, because we do high school here. If you're just finding us, yeah, we do high school too. We're not like, ooh, high school. No, that's a big part of what we do. High school, college, pro, college, high school. So this Friday night, we have Hamilton, Chandler Hamilton, against Saguaro on national television on ESPN. It is this Friday night. That's a 6 p.m. kick at Saguaro High School. On our Football AZ show this week on Fox Sports Arizona, tonight, tomorrow, and Thursday, Eric Sorensen will be one-on-one with Mike Zadepski, the head coach at Hamilton. And Jordan Hamm will have Brandon Huffman on from recruiting side to look at all the Division I players and offers and all that stuff for Hamilton and Saguaro. And I think both guys are going to be at the game. I may even run out to that game on Friday night. I'm going to storm Williams Field and Castile sideline on Friday night, but I may run up to Saguaro because game starts early. So the game itself, if this were not COVID, it would be sold out at Saguaro High School. There'd be people there early. There'd be people on top of cars. If you're a fan of sport and you see what the Cardinals are doing with Christian Kirk, a Saguaro guy, and Byron Murphy, a Saguaro guy, and how they've played, it's why you go out on a Friday night and support them and have some fun with it. So that will be on Friday. Fantasy football with Sandy Charles, chopping it up with Michael Fabiano. That is next.
Hey, everyone. Welcome on in. I'm Sandy Charles, and I'm joined by Sports Illustrated senior fantasy analyst Michael Fabiano. Michael, breaking news this morning, just coming down the line. The Dolphins have named Tua Tagovailoa their starting quarterback. They are on a bye this week, but next week he will get the start. It's Tua time. What's your reaction to this news?
So I feel like this was the plan for them because Fitzpatrick's playing really well, right? So I feel like they had decided in advance, we're going to play Tua after the bye and he's going to be our starter. And the Dolphins are playing good football right now. They went in and whipped the Niners in San Francisco. They beat the Jets, although that's not much of an accomplishment at this point. But I'm a bit surprised. And from a fantasy standpoint, I'm going to miss the beard. He's been great. He's been a top 10 fantasy quarterback since the middle of last season. I don't know if Tua Tagovailoa is going to be able to duplicate that sort of production. With that being said, he's still certainly worth a look, obviously in two QB and Superflex leagues. In 12-team leagues, I think he's worth a look. He'll be a matchup-based starter down the stretch. And I feel like in the past, we've sort of shrugged off rookie quarterbacks. They can't do anything. Joe Burrow's been pretty good this year. Justin Herbert's been fantastic this year. So I'm not going to do that with Tua. He's a guy who was ridiculously accurate in college last year, completed over 71% of his passes. And he can give you some yards on the ground as well. So it's pretty exciting. It's a downgrade from a fantasy perspective because Fitzpatrick was averaging over 20 points per game. I can't see Tua doing that on a regular basis, but I don't think this is a negative for the players around him in terms of, you know, the Preston Williams and Mike Gesickis and Devontae Parkers of the world. Would I rather have Fitzpatrick there from a fantasy standpoint? Yeah, because I know exactly what I'm getting, but Tua is a pretty good young quarterback and it's going to be fun to watch him play.
Let's move to injuries with Eagles tight end Zach Ertz out with an ankle injury and running back Miles Sanders injury. From a fantasy point of view, who has the opportunity to step in now?
So Boston Scott will be the guy in that backfield. And we've sort of seen this story in week one and he didn't do anything. But, you know, the Giants defense is not all that good. So you're in the bye weeks too. There's four teams off. You've got COVID, you've got injuries. So he's going to end up being in the mix as a flex starter. Yeah, the Eagles tight ends are a mess right now. Now, if Dallas Goedert can come back, then he's an obvious play. If not, and Ertz is out for the next 3 to 4 weeks, well, Richard Rodgers would be in the mix from a fantasy perspective. We're digging deep here, Sandy. So if you're looking at DFS or maybe in a deeper league, you need a tight end. I don't know that anyone would need a tight end that desperately, but it is what it is right now. Richard Rodgers would be the guy with Ertz out and if Goddard can't go.
Now, keeping it on injuries, 49ers running back Raheem Mostert also out. So how do you handle the 49ers backfield?
So in the past, it would have been, well, I'm going to start Jerick McKinnon, mm-hmm. and Jeff Wilson is going to be in the mix as a flex starter. Well, Wilson's a little bit banged up. McKinnon didn't do anything last week, and they used Jamichael Hasty down the stretch of that game against the Rams. So now I'm a little confused. I'm like, well, I thought it would be McKinnon, but maybe it's going to be Hasty. And so at this point, I would probably fit, like, with four teams off, you're going to have to play a Niners running back, whether it's going to be McKinnon or Hasty. Just keep in mind, the Patriots defense is really good against the run. Like, I get it. Like, you know, Lindsey rushed for over 100 yards last week against them on over 20 carries. But that's really the first good number that a running back has put on New England this year in terms of rushing yards. So I'd fade McKinnon this week if I could. Most people can't because the matchup is very difficult, but volume is king in fantasy football. But the problem is, I don't know if McKinnon is going to get that volume. Maybe it's going to be Hasty. Wilson, again, is banged up. So that one there is a big question mark. That's just what we need too, Sandy, is another confusing backfield across the National Football League. We've already got enough of them.
We really do. Well, let's talk some positive. Where do you rank Titans quarterback Ryan Tannehill now?
I've had him in the top 10 the whole time. Like, he's been great. I don't understand why people aren't starting him every week. Like, yeah. Since he took over as the Titans starter last year, he's been averaging 20 points plus per game. He's been playing at an MVP level, and I'm not saying that he's completely matchup proof. He's not Patrick Mahomes or, Lamar Jackson for any stretch, but he's been playing damn good. And I feel like he should be owned in 100% of leagues. On ESPN earlier this week, he was still available in like 40% of league, which is bananas to me. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me at all. I mean, unless you don't want to win your fantasy league, then fine, leave him on the waiver wire. But yeah, Tannehill is a guy that I feel like has proven that you can trust him. He got away from Adam Gase. And now he's playing at a very high level. Where have we heard that before?
I was going to ask, what's the magic this year with Tannehill? But I think you just touched on it. He got away from Gase. Would that be it?
Yeah, Kenyon Drake did the same thing. And not only did he break that long touchdown at the end of the night to put the dagger on my beloved Dallas Cowboys, but that run caused me to lose in my Alice in Chains league to Michael Bublé. So I got a double you-know-what in that game last night, but it is what it is. Yeah, Adam Gase should not be a head coach in the National Football League. He will be until the end of the year. The Jets will not win a game. They'll get Trevor Lawrence. They'll fire Adam Gase. Apparently, that seems to be their master plan.
Now, Kansas City, with the addition of Le'Veon Bell, how does that impact Clyde Edwards-Helaire?
I mean, it's not good, but Jay Glazer, my pal over on Fox Sports yesterday, said that they did not bring Bell in to be the starter. They brought him in to be a guy who helps reduce the wear and tear on Edwards-Helaire. And Edwards-Helaire looked great. He looked great against Buffalo. Like, rushed for over 160 yards, would have had a touchdown if it didn't get nullified due to a penalty. He's had that happen twice now in the last couple of weeks. But it hurts because, you know, you're going from, like, Darrell Williams and Darwin Thompson to Le'Veon Bell. So it hurts. And there's going to be games where Bell's going to be better than CEH. He's not a top 10 running back anymore. I'd say he's an RB2 now. Le'Veon Bell is going to have some standalone flex value, although I don't think I'd play him this week against Denver. They have a pretty tough run defense. But, yeah, it's not good from a fantasy standpoint if you have Clyde Edwards-Helaire. It's not a death blow, but I don't know that he's going to be in the mix as a top 10 fantasy running back every single week moving forward.
Steelers wide receiver Juju Smith-Schuster, if you own him, how, as a fantasy owner, are you handling him?
With a box of Kleenex, because he is not produced, and the Steelers have a lot of weapons now. Deontay Johnson was actually leading the team in targets going into last week, and Chase Claypool has proven that this guy is the real deal. James Washington can beat you deep, and then you got Juju, who is probably the most uninspiring Steelers wide receiver, right? I mean, James Washington obviously is going to be hit and miss because if he doesn't hit one long, he's not going to do anything for you. But Juju's like a wide receiver 3 now in fantasy. Deontay Johnson, we're not sure if he's going to be back this week. So the matchup is actually favorable against Tennessee. They haven't been very good against slot receivers, which we saw in recent weeks here. But I just I don't see a scenario where Juju is a week in and week out starter now. I just don't. James Conner's running the football well. They've got a lot of mouth speed in the passing game. If Deontay can't play this week, then you play Juju. Maybe you have to play him regardless, but he has been a pretty big disappointment so far.
Speaking of disappointments, we have to talk about it. The Cowboys, that dagger in your heart.
It's fine. Cowboys it's fine. I know what the Cowboys are. We're a garbage team with a garbage defense and a garbage owner, and we miss Dak Prescott. I'm a little bitter today. That's for sure. Andy Dalton looked terrible. Dalton has looked terrible historically on primetime games, which whatever. He's got Washington this week, and so the matchup's decent. But do I trust Andy Dalton after what happened last night? Heck no. No way. But I also can't kill Dalton that much. The Cowboys offensive line is a mess right now. Everybody's hurt. Like, it wasn't enough that we already had a few starters down. Then Zach Martin got hurt last night. Like, the Cowboys offensive line is shot right now. It's one of the worst in the league. It's all backups, basically. And so Dalton takes some of the blame, not all of the blame. Zeke was a bum last night. He had two fumbles, put the Cowboys in a bad position. Right now, you're still starting CeeDee Lamb. You're still starting Amari Cooper. You're still starting Zeke. Dalton Schultz is a good play this week. But from a fantasy standpoint, Dalton, he's a major downgrade from Dak Prescott. Bottom line, was he one of the best backup quarterbacks in the National Football League? Yeah, but there's not a lot of good quarterbacks on this planet, apparently. And so it was very disappointing, and the Cowboys' defense is just historically bad right now. So anybody that's playing the Cowboys, start them all at this point. Hell, you could play Kyle Allen in a 2QB league this week with confidence.
I woke up and the Cardinals are the number two defense in the league, and I did not expect that. So yeah, from last
that's
night's
for sure.
game.
Well, that's what happens when you play the Cowboys. All your defensive stats go right through the roof.
They really did. Well, let's wrap up. Waiver wire needs. Are there names on the wire? Where do you want to start? Quarterback?
Yeah, so I'll go through the quarterbacks. Teddy Bridgewater had a stinker last week, but he was a sit-em for me because of the matchup against Chicago. He's got the Saints in Atlanta the next 2 weeks. You could play him this week. Gardner Minshew's still out there floating around. Tua Tagovailoa is obviously going to be if Ryan Tannehill's out there for some reason, I have no idea why he would be, pick him up. Justin Herbert was on a bye last week, so he may be out there on the waiver wire in some leagues. Derek Carr has had three games with 20-plus points out of his last four. Tough matchup against the Bucs this week, though, but he could be added in leagues where maybe you've lost Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Last week was tough with running backs on the waiver wires. How is it looking?
I mean, it's a little bit better. Like, Boston Scott's going to be the top add. JD McKissick, 22 targets and 19 catches in the last 3 weeks. And guess who he plays this week? The Cowboys. So he's a flex option. Jerick McKinnon, Jamichael Hasty, also worth a look with Raheem Mostert hurt. J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards, if they're not owned, you can maybe take a flyer on them. Dobbins is probably owned in most leagues, though, because Mark Ingram got hurt, but reports look like he'll be back in time for week 8. If you're desperate, I mean desperate, really desperate, really Frank Gore, desperate. Michael P. Ryan for the Jets. Damian Harris should be owned in more leagues than 43% on ESPN, although the matchup's not great this week. And if you have Joe Mixon, you should probably be picking up Giovanni Bernard as a handcuff.
And wide receiver?
Travis Fulgham, I told you to pick him up last week. I didn't like the matchup against Baltimore, so what did he do? 6 catches, 75 yards, and a touchdown. He's been great. He's the number one receiver in Philadelphia. They have the Giants on Thursday night. T. Higgins, probably already owned in most leagues, but I looked on ESPN, 50% freedom out there. Go get him, please. I mean, he's been very good. Tim Patrick, Adam Humphries, James Washington, also worth a look. And then Marcus Johnson and Zach Pascal, but they're on a bye in Indianapolis, so not as much of a I need to go out and get them right away.
Last, any other waiver wire needs or last fantasy football thoughts?
So, well, we can go through a couple of tight ends. Trey Burton's worth a look, but Indianapolis has a bye. Irv Smith Jr.'s worth a look. He has a bye. Richard Rodgers, as I mentioned, then Anthony Firkser. But it looks like Jonathan Smith's going to play this week. He had the ankle injury. So, final thoughts? Play everybody against Dallas. I'm Sandy, I'll tell you, I was so mad last night. I woke up mad because that was embarrassing. There's a couple of things that you can guarantee right now. You can start number one and number two wide receivers against the Cowboys and be in a pretty good spot. Terry McLaurin's a great play this week. And then anybody who's playing against the Jets, start their defense. So this week it's Buffalo. And so now, you know, now we've kind of seen that there are certain teams that are just really, really bad against certain positions. Like, we know Green Bay is really bad against the run. We know Carolina is really bad against the run. We know the Raiders are really bad against the run. So you want to be targeting those players in your matchups this week. All those guys are basically stardoms regardless of the matchup there. And also, you know, keep in mind that the NFL is a week-to-week league. So Andy Dalton sucked against the Cardinals. He was awful, and the offensive line is bad. That doesn't mean he's going to be terrible the whole season. I'm trying to have some optimism here. And don't base your decisions on whether to start or sit a player based on what he did in the previous week, because things change every single week in the National Football League from week to week. That's why it's so hard to predict a lot of times. So if one of your players was bad last week, that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be bad again. It's all based on the matchups. It's based on volume and that kind of thing. So don't get too hung up into, oh, well, he was horrible last week, so I'm not playing him this week. Look at Matt Ryan. He was great this past week. 4 touchdowns. The previous 2 weeks, they had been bad. So keep that in mind, guys. And like, unless a guy is on a trend of just stinking like Mark Ingram's been bad all season long, then you kind of can guess that that's going to be the trend for the rest of the season. But I wouldn't go so far as to say, well, this guy was bad last week, so I have less confidence in him, and I'm not going to play him this week. The NFL is week to week. Things change. It's unpredictable. So make sure you're looking at the matchups and in terms of the volume of the player on his team.
As always, Michael, thank you so much. Insight. It's Michael Fabiano. I'm Sandy Charles, and we'll see you next week at the same time.